You know, when I was a kid, I played sports. But I didn't play sports for very long. You see, as soon as I joined the White Township soccer and baseball teams, I began learning quite a lot. And one of the biggest things I learned was something about myself and my interactions with my peers. You see, I very quickly learned that I did not relate to the other kids my age. We didn't seem to have the same goals. Whereas I had stepped onto the field looking to learn how to actually play soccer and baseball by listening to my coaches, the other kids preferred to dig holes, pull up grass, and accomplish some other goals that never really made any sense to me. You see, I didn't last too long in that environment, and I ended up only engaging in these sports for a few years. But one of the lessons that I remember to this day that I learned while playing sports was to be patient. See, baseball taught me to be patient for the right moment. Now, in baseball, when you are the one batting, your coach will often tell you to wait for your pitch. And what the coach means by that is don't swing until you get a good pitch. Don't swing until you know the moment is right. You know you'll have to swing eventually, but don't swing until you're sure that it's a good pitch. Now, tonight, we are going to take a look at a time when Jesus tells Peter, James, and John, three of his most faithful disciples, to do something very similar to this. He shows them something amazing, and he tells them to hold on to it, to use it at the right moment, but not yet. Now, tonight, we're going to see Jesus reveal his true glory to his three most trusted disciples while he is still on earth. He reveals this sight to his inner circle, and we're going to see what it means for them to witness that glory in person. If you'd like to turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 17, we are going to begin our study tonight right at the beginning of that chapter. Now again, that's Matthew 17, verse 1. Now this chapter picks up right in the heat of Jesus' ministry. At this point, Jesus has performed many miracles and given out a lot of wisdom. Jesus is also hot off the tail of one of his famous cookouts with the feeding of the 4,000. And that event went pretty well. I mean, as the name implies, a lot of people went, so that's good. Jesus is kind of on fire, and he's got a lot of miracles left to perform. And leading up to this point, we most recently see Jesus having a lot of interesting conversations with Peter. In the midst of a lot of different people having different opinions about who Jesus really is, he asks Peter, "Who do you say I am?" And Peter responds, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And most recently, when Jesus begins explaining that he must die and rise again, Peter doesn't take this very well. And you see, Jesus tells Peter that he is only thinking of earthly things and not of heavenly things as he should be. You see, a lot of interesting things are happening at this time, but one specific thing happens that we're going to look at tonight. So let's dive into it. Chapter 17, verse 1. Now strap in for this one because it takes off fast. Verse 1. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter and the two brothers, James and John, and led them up a high mountain to be alone. Now as the men watched, Jesus' appearance was transformed so that his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. Suddenly, Moses and Elijah appeared and began talking with Jesus. Peter exclaimed, "Lord, it's wonderful for us to be here. If you want, I'll make three shelters as memorials, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But even as he spoke, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my dearly loved son who brings me great joy. Listen to him." The disciples were terrified and fell face down on the ground. Then Jesus came over and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid." And when they looked up, Moses and Elijah were gone, and they saw only Jesus. As they went back down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, "Don't tell anyone what you've seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Wow. That kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? Just walking along one day. And one of the things I kind of like about this scene is that it kind of came out of nowhere for the disciples as well. At this point, Peter had seen Jesus perform miracles, but he'd never seen Jesus like this. There was no warning for it either, just boom, there it is. And even though Peter believed in Jesus as the Son of God, it's still pretty unexpected to see Jesus in radiant glory right before you. Then, to top it all off, Moses and Elijah show up, standing right next to Jesus. Now, if you're not really too familiar with these guys, first off, they're dead. Well, Moses is dead, but Elijah just kind of got taken straight up to heaven. And Peter, looking at all of this, really has no idea what to do. He's so amazed and confused at the same time that he just kind of starts talking. He just starts babbling, saying, "Man, it's so good to be here. Like, we should, like, I'll build a shelter for each of you guys. Do you want that? Is that what can do you want me to like start building something? I'll do something." And in Luke's account of this moment, he adds something extra here, which I really like. He says, Peter only said this because he didn't really know what he was saying. He was just kind of talking because he didn't really know what else to do. And I think that's fair, given the circumstances. I think you and me wouldn't have known what to do or say here either. And James and John don't know what to do. They just stand there stunned. And eventually, as the voice of God begins proclaiming, "This is my dearly beloved son, listen to him," all three of them fall on their faces because it's just so much to take in. And just like that, it's over. Now, these three would most likely not understand the full purpose of what they saw that day until much later. But this event is actually very big in affirming Jesus as the Son of God and as the fulfillment of everything in the Old Testament. Now, when God gave the Israelites the law in the Old Testament, he gave it to Moses to write down, and then Moses gave God's law to the people. In Jesus' time, the Pharisees see Moses as a legend. If Moses said it, they're going with it. And Elijah is pretty much known as the prophet. There were a lot of prophets and a lot of prophecies given about Jesus, the Messiah, who would save mankind from sin, but Elijah's clashes with the prophets of Baal and his whole, you know, being taken up to heaven in a chariot of fire thing, that kind of makes him the definitive prophet. So having both of these individuals present Jesus as he kind of shines forth in glory, while the voice of God declares Jesus as his son and tells us to listen to him, that's pretty big. If you ever thought to yourself, "Hey, Jesus' teachings seem to be contradicting the Old Testament law," or thought to yourself, "Hey, this guy probably isn't who the prophets were talking about, right?" This moment completely ends that line of thinking. You see, Moses and Elijah are both present there, basically saying, "We support this guy. We support Jesus. Everything we did led to him. Listen to him." This was a big moment. But the disciples probably didn't realize everything it meant until Jesus came back from the dead. But they didn't need to understand it yet. Point one, you don't have to understand what God is doing yet. You don't have to understand what God is doing yet. God might do something that you don't quite get. You don't really understand the purpose of what's happening. And maybe that's okay for now. Now, when you see something happen on the news and you wonder, "God, why would you let that happen? I don't understand, God. What good is coming out of this?" We don't always understand what God is doing, but we know that he's good. And we have to remember that. When things happen that we don't understand, we should realize that we don't need to understand. And this can be hard. But when we are struggling to understand, we can follow the takeaway for this point. And the takeaway is this. Consider the long game. We all have very limited perspectives compared to God. Because God is the one playing the game. We are all simply pieces on the board. If you've ever played the board game Risk, you will know what I'm talking about. We are all like little soldiers on the board, fighting battles and working to spread the message of Jesus. But God is the one playing, looking at everything with a top-down view. Now, as pieces on the board, we don't understand why God might tell us to fight a battle. We don't see the other battles that are happening. We don't understand everything that we do see around us, but God does. We might not understand why God allows Christian missionaries to be killed for their beliefs, but here's the thing we need to remember about the long game. Our side doesn't take losses like the other side does. We do not lose troops forever. When one of our troops falls in battle, God knows every single one of our troops are coming back again one day. So if we need to take some short-term losses, that will be reversed in a few short years in order to gain more eternal victories that will never fade away. That is worth it. If Jim Elliot is killed by the indigenous people of Ecuador in an attempt to show them the love of Christ, only to have his wife and children reach out again to those people and save many of their souls, that is worth it. And Jim Elliot would agree. God is not playing the short game. We do not want to win short-term victories, short-term arguments, short-term battles if they cost us eternal victories. Because every short-term loss we have experienced will be reversed with God. People like Jim Elliot will rise when Jesus returns. Jim Elliot wasn't lost. We don't take losses. He was simply taken off the board for now. So the next time you don't understand what God is doing, you need to remember the long game. And trust the captain of your team who can see the board a lot more clearly than you can. Now, Peter, James, and John would get information that they didn't understand yet, but it would be big evidence for the validity of Jesus' message after he was gone. And that's the long game. Now, there's another thing we learn from Peter here at Jesus' transfiguration. You see, in this moment, God shows Peter something so mind-bogglingly epic, something so amazing that his mind probably couldn't even comprehend what he was seeing, let alone what it meant. But it was clear that God was showing him something. It was clear that he was meant to witness this event, but Peter didn't really know why yet. And in the midst of this uncertainty, Peter, in his mind, he had a sense of urgency around what he was seeing. He was unsure of what to do, though, so he just kind of starts doing something. He just starts speaking. He starts offering to do something about what he's seeing. In the absence of understanding, Peter thinks that he must be missing some kind of cue or call to action, so he starts offering to build shelters for each of the men before him. But this event didn't happen because God wanted Peter to build some shelters. In fact, nothing would be asked of Peter, James, and John, the witnesses of this event, except that they do nothing after it's over. They are simply asked not to talk about what they saw until Jesus comes back from the dead. Now, when Peter begins speaking and offering to do something to commemorate the occasion, the voice of God begins to speak and basically doesn't even acknowledge what Peter is saying. And the subtext here is basically God saying, "It's okay, Pete. You're good. You don't need to do anything, buddy. Just watch. Just watch." Now, in Peter's bewilderment at the amazing sight before him, he assumed he was meant to do something about what he was being shown, but he wasn't quite yet. He was simply meant to watch for right then. And that leads us to point two. The things God shows you don't always require an immediate response. When God shows you something, when God gives you a revelation, he will make it clear to you if you are meant to do something then and there. But if not, he might be showing you something that will be important down the road. God is a clear communicator. If you have no idea how to use the information God is giving you, you probably don't need to use it yet. God will show you what it means when you need to know. But you might not be asked to do anything with it right now. God can show us things that cause us to make certain moves down the line. In order to prepare our hearts and our minds, God will show us things that are meant for later. Just like Peter, James, and John, God can show us something that we know is big, but we don't know why. We know he's shown us something that we were meant to see, but we don't know why we were meant to see it or even what it means for us. You see, when Samuel anointed David as the king of Israel in the Old Testament, David wasn't sitting on a throne the next day. In fact, it took years before David would actually rule over Israel. The Lord showed David that he would be king, and for years David was left to wonder why he had told him this if he wasn't really going to be doing any ruling. But oftentimes, we are shown these things because they will be important at the right time. It will matter that we have seen what God showed us, even if we didn't understand it quite yet. We just need to hold on to what God shows us and remember it for the moment when God shows us the why behind it all. For Jesus' disciples, this why wouldn't come for some time. They wouldn't fully understand why they had seen what they had seen until it was time for them to step up and spread the gospel. But they had to wait a while, sitting on this revelation and not fully understanding the why of it all. Now maybe, like David, God has shown you something that you know will be important for your life, but you don't know when the moment will come. What do you do then? Well, that leads us to this point's takeaway. Wait for your pitch. If God tells you that at some point, sooner or later, you will have to swing on this one, then you need to wait for the right pitch. Whatever God has for you to do, he will show you the right time to make it happen. For David, the Lord told him to step up as king when Saul died. That was his pitch, and God told him it was time to swing. If the time is now, God will tell you, swing. In 2 Peter 1, verse 16 to 18, he tells the Gentile believers, "For we did not follow cleverly devised stories when we told you about the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ in power, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. He received honor and glory from God the Father when the voice came to him from the majestic glory, saying, 'This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased.' We ourselves heard this voice that came from heaven when we were with him on the sacred mountain." You see, for Peter, he used the amazing revelation of Jesus' radiant glory as an assurance for other believers as the early church began. When the time came, Peter recognized the moment to use what God had shown him. You will too. Though you may not understand what God is doing, you need to remember that he has a plan for everything. Everything that happens is being used for the greater good, for the eternal salvation of people's souls. In our lack of understanding, we need to remember that God is playing the long game. And as this is happening, we will be shown things that we know we were meant to see, but we may not understand them right away. As God plays the long game, we need to be ready for our moment to swing. And as the worship leaders return, and we sing one last song, take some inventory. Have you been struggling with some things that you've seen because you haven't really been remembering the long game? Have you been in such a rush to understand everything that God is doing that you miss out on your opportunity to connect with him in the waiting? Talk to him as we sing this last song. Would you stand? Dear Jesus, Lord, I thank you for bringing us here tonight. Lord, I thank you for teaching us what you wanted to teach us, Lord.
Lord, I pray that whatever we've learned, we would carry it through the week, Lord. Not simply learn it now and then forget it as troubles and tribulations come our way, Lord. As the struggles of our daily life go on, Lord, I pray that we would carry you with us. I pray that we would wait for your perfect timing, Lord, even if it might not make sense to us. Lord, I thank you for always being there for us, for having a plan for us, and for loving us, Lord. I thank you for letting us in on the adventure, God. Lord, lead us home. You'll finish what you started, God. Let's run to the finish line together. In your name I pray, Jesus. Amen. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We'll see you next week, Saturday night, 7 o'clock.